From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I am Hunter Dusing, and joining me is Mr. John Grace in the Rocky Mountain High of Colorado. Say hello, John.
Hello.
And in the wild outback of Australia, we've got Mr. Stuart Balk. Say hello, Stu.
Hey, let's go to Italy, make a shit movie, and see La Schedule Island.
Yeah. Hey, all right there. And joining us, one of my favorite guests on this show, returning once again, is Eric Zaldivar, our Italian movie guru. Say hello, Eric.
Hey, who loves your baby?
Boom! Love it. All right. So the movie we are
I guarantee you, the only reason why Telly Savalas was in this film was like, yeah, I'll work for no money, but women and cigars, it'll do.
So, yeah, yeah. You know, Telly, you know, he would do any Italian film. A spaghetti western he's in that I think is underrated is A Reason to Live, A Reason to Die. That's one I like quite a bit. It's got a he's in charge of a Southern Confederate fort that looks like a Spanish castle. You know, no forts like
Confederate. It is.
you cross spaghetti western. Those movies suck.
Well, Telly did a lot of like Italian films. In fact, Tarantino kind of pokes fun at it a little bit in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. But anyway, so the movie we're doing today is not a spaghetti western. Every time Eric's been on, we've talked about spaghetti westerns. But actually, we're doing another Italian film. The guy who directed it is a guy who did a lot of famous spaghetti westerns. But the movie we're doing is Violent City, starring Charles Bronson, Telly Savalas, and Jill Ireland, directed by Sergio Sollima, a name you guys might know from The Big Gun Down, one I watched the other day, Face to Face, with Tomas Milian. His son is Stefan Sollima, who just did the Sicario sequel. So, Violent City, this is one that's kind of, it's one of those films that's like The Killer, where it's kind of a child of Jean-Pierre Melville's Le Samurai. So, it's one that's always been recommended to me as like a great Bronson movie. I think, John, you were the one who first brought this to my radar, I think. I could be wrong.
Maybe.
What are some of your, what's kind of your history with it, I guess?
When I first saw it, I rented the American videotape version that MPI Video put out called The Family, which they call it that to cash in on The Godfather. And it was cut by like 15 or 20 minutes. It was much shorter than the version that's on the Blue Underground DVD. That's out in circulation. And when I saw then I got like a Japanese videotape version. It was a bit longer. Then I got the Blue Underground version that seemed incredibly long. And that's when I realized, I was like, I think I enjoyed the U.S. version much better. Well, much more than I care for the later versions I saw, especially the Blue Underground. It just seems to go on forever.
Well, okay, Eric, you said needed it. You read my mind there. And I think because I watched the Blue Underground version, and something that I don't like about two things. One, the Blue Underground version adds in scenes that were not in the American version, and they're scenes that I don't think are necessary. But also, I don't like watching these kind of patchwork versions of movies where the language changes and we sort of get that. So, Eric, you chimed in. Like, what were some of your thoughts there?
Yeah, I grew up with things like that, the patchwork that you're talking about. You know, I started getting into cult cinema probably around the time that Blue Underground was at its peak, like the early 2000s. And they would do that a lot. They would take elements that were excised from the American releases of things and put back in with the Italian language because that was never dubbed over.
Well, me too. And I think another movie we talked about, Django Kill, the Blue Underground release has that in it, if I'm not mistaken. It's got the parts where it goes from English to Italian.
I was going to ask you about that. Sorry, because the one I watched was on Daily Motion, and it went from English to Italian. I thought, what the hell is
it? It's the Blue Underground version. Yeah.
Yep. They subtitled the upload for whatever reason. Yeah, so Stu and I are the Daily Motion brothers, because that's where I saw it.
That's what we're going to call you from now on, the Daily Motion brothers.
I own Violent City. It's just back in Florida. I haven't seen it in almost 10 years. Daily Motion was, unfortunately, because it's the worst possible streaming platform. I watched it on there to refresh my memory. It played about as well as it did 10 years ago. And it's all due to my review of the movie is the same as it was a decade ago, where it's great opener, great ending, the middle is saggy as hell, so it's basically a shit sandwich.
That's the way. Okay, I was sitting there thinking, okay, I'm glad you said that, because when I was watching this film, every time I've tried to watch it, okay, I've had this in my to-watch pile, but every time I start it and I'm like, this movie's awesome. And then Bronson goes to prison, and then the movie just drags and I lose interest.
Yeah.
And so this time I watched it the whole way through, and I was like, man, this opener is awesome, but this movie is boring. Like, it has some good segments in there where, like, Bronson's going to kill someone, and, like, even those are a little saggy, but the ending is great. It had a terrific final scene with the elevator assassination.
But suicide by cop.
Yeah, the suicide by cop. That was terrific.
Suicide by cop. Yeah.
But you know, I was watching it going, I am so bored watching this movie, and I like the aesthetic, but there's too many. One thing about this film that I didn't like was, there's way too much of Charles Bronson getting down with chicks. For some reason, Bronson is not a sexual person to me.
That's not that. That's just jealousy on your part.
Okay, it could be. It could be. But there's something
about
Bronson.
He's got a cool mustache, Hunter. He's the only guy who can have that mustache.
I'll tell you what. I don't know how old Charles Bronson was in this film. But boy, that is one fit fucker, I tell you.
He looked good. No, he looked good, but he's just not a sexual being to me. He's like, you know, and there'll be scenes where he's like starting to rape a girl or something. And then some other people are fighting and she's like, why do I always encounter violence when I'm with you? And he's like, hey, it's just a violent city, baby.
I'm not gonna lie. I sat there and I watched this and I said, what the fuck does Jewel Island see in this?
Hey. I remember Richard Harrison told me one time that I don't understand it. The women really liked him.
Oh, Michael Winner never got over it. He never forgave Bronson for stealing Jill Island off of him. He never forgave him for that. That's why he clashed so many times on the set. It was like,
I wasn't even aware that they knew. I thought I remember reading those articles too a few years back when Winner needed some much needed attention or something, and he went on to say that he was with Jill Ireland before Bronson and her met, and that she made him promise that she'd never tell Bronson, that he would never tell Bronson.
Yeah, no, he harbored a secret. Like, he never told Bronson, but I'm sure he gave him a hard time on the set.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, all right. I understand.
Bronson, why are you being so mean to me, Michael? He's like, you stole my girl. That's why.
Well, a lot of boomer women do like Bronson. They love him. Like, I've encountered many a Mexican grandmother that thought he was the hottest man ever in movies.
That's so interesting that there's a segment of people who see him as a sex symbol. My wife commented, she goes, I always just thought he was a poor man's Burt Reynolds.
No, Burt Reynolds was the handsome Charles Bronson.
Yeah, exactly.
But, well, the thing is, it's like, I remember when some women thought Steven Seagal was attractive back when he was somewhat thin.
Oh, man.
And a long time ago.
The baller now.
Well, some Well, someone had told me, he goes, well, it's because he looks like he can take care of things. So the idea is these women like a guy like Bronson because he looks like he can handle anything.
They look like they're confident men, you know.
Right.
Yeah. He can take care of a Japanese sex trade ring. And
yeah.
I mean, he looks like the type of guy that, what's so funny about Death Wish, and we made jokes about it in the Death Wish show, is like, what mugger is going to mug him? They're going to cross the street when they see him coming. He's mean looking. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Death Wish, hey, Hunter, how good is Death Wish 4?
Death Wish 4 rules. Oh my gosh. I couldn't believe how much. I watched it like one afternoon thinking, okay, this will be like something I can just waste time with while I'm grading. And I was like, this movie's awesome. This is way better than Death Wish 2 or 3.
I think it's the best sequel of a lot.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
100%.
I was like, this is great. Like, it's not another rehash. Like, Bronson's like a hitman in it. It's so cool.
It's Bronson as Mac Bull and the Executioner.
Yeah.
Is what it is.
Yeah, totally. I thought it was terrific. I watched that in 10 to Midnight, and I was like, man, I'm getting the cream of the canon Bronson crop here. You know?
Yeah, it's the best stuff.
Death Wish 4 has Kay Lenz as well, and it helps a lot.
Yeah, she's great. I love her. Underrated.
Hunter, how much of the canon fodder have you seen from the Bronson canon?
I think I've just seen the Death Wish films and 10 to Midnight. If I'm not exactly sure what else I've seen, if I've seen anything else.
Yeah, if ever you sit through Assassination, come talk about this.
No.
That's a tough one.
No, I never saw that, but now I'm interested because everybody groaned.
No.
I wish it was good bad, but it's not even that.
No.
Messenger of Death, nobody ever talks about that one because I think it's the movie where Bronson doesn't even kill anybody. But that's a lot better than some of the other ones. He plays a journalist. It's not terrible. It could be worse.
Whoa. Assassination was directed by Peter Hunt?
Yep.
Yes.
Oh, my
yes.
gosh.
That guy has the most mysterious film career ever.
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
Does anybody know why he didn't do another Bond?
I don't know.
I thought it was because he was like an editor on all the films up to that, and he directed, and then he just disappeared from the franchise completely after Honor Majesty.
Yeah, but what's weird is he made like movies with Roger Moore. He made like that Wilbur Smith adaptation. What is it? Something the Devil or it was Roger Moore and Lee Marvin. I forget the title of it.
Shout
the Devil. That's it. I think he directed that, and he directed Gold, which is another Wilbur Smith adaptation with Roger Moore and Susanna York. So
that was one of those backyard home video titles. Gold.
Oh yeah, it was a public domain.
Yeah.
At one point, there was a nice DVD released in England not long ago, and I think maybe Kino put it out or one of those companies.
But yeah, I mean. The stuff, those two movies, Death Wish 4 and 10 to Midnight, were directed by J. Lee Thompson, and he made a lot of movies with Bronson.
Yeah, Hunter, you know that our friend Paul Talbot actually owns a certain device featured in 10 to Midnight.
Really? Which one?
Yes. You know what this is for, right? You know what he. You know, seen him talk.
Paul actually owns that?
I think he does. I think he has that device. He has one of those sex toy devices that was made by the prop outfit. So it doesn't make any sense when you look at it in the movie, but because they didn't go to a sex store.
That movie, though, I got to tell you, I think it's legitimately way more scary than most slasher films I've seen.
It is.
The killer,
slasher fans hate it when you say that, too, but it is. It's actually kind of
so. The killer is so skin-crawlingly disgusting. Like, he gets naked when he kills people. It is so, like, I'm like, cringing right now just thinking about it. He is such a vile, disgusting character. And when Bronson shoots him at the end, it is like, you know, Dirty Harry or something. But you're sitting there going, oh my gosh, just kill this maggot, please. You know, he is such a foul, like, excuse for... A human being, you know.
I still say one of my favorite films of Bronson from the 70s is The Stone Killer. I really like that one a lot.
That is a good one.
Yeah,
one of the few times he played a cop in the 70s. Maybe the only time.
Well, Speaking of like the 70s, okay, because Violent City, bringing it back to this film, this came out in 1970. And, you know, when I see Bronson in films in the 60s, he's not a lead character, at least in the ones I've seen. I've seen stuff like The Great Escape, Once Upon a Time in the West.
I've still never seen that yet.
Oh my gosh, you got to see it. Magnificent Seven.
You haven't seen Honor Among Thieves or Farewell Friend, it's also called, with him and Alain Delon?
No, I haven't seen those.
That was his big breakthrough film in Europe, I think. Well, I think that was like
a
huge hit.
I feel like I saw Bronson in a lot of movies where he was part of a bigger cast, but right. I didn't see him playing a lead tough guy. Was this sort of around, when was the beginning of Bronson, the lead tough guy phase of his career?
It was post, just before Farewell Friend. It was, Les Passions de Lupi, or however you pronounce it. It's, the writer on the Rain. I think it's from 68.
So it was like a few years before this movie, like late 60s.
Yeah, just only two. Oh, no, never mind. Rider on the Rain was 1970. So I think I was – when was Farewell Friend?
I think it was 69.
Farewell Friend was 68.
Okay.
That was his breakthrough hit.
Yeah, Grace was right. Yeah, John's right.
Yeah, because there was an A&E biography where they had this interview clip with him, and he says, yeah, I did that picture with Alain Delon, and it was a big hit, and it's one of my best pictures.
Yeah.
And House of Wax in 53. He played Eagle.
That's right, but he was Baczynski in that.
That's no one knows. Yeah, yeah. Very people know.
So, Farewell Friend, Rider on the Rain, Violent City. These were all kind of in the same.
And Red Sun was very popular. Red
so Sun. Did Al Pacino come up to him and go, "Listen, you gotta win fights. So you go to Italy, you make some films with Sergio Sollima, you win some fights, you come back."
I think he had problems finding good work, like in movies. Like, he was always a villain on like the Virginian and Western shows like that. Like Rawhide, there's an episode where he's a villain or a bully, and you think he's going to have a confrontation with Clint Eastwood, which would be like iconic, but it actually doesn't happen.
But the thing is with Charles Bronson, he's hard to market because he hasn't got the good looks of the young Clint Eastwood.
Right.
He's got no good looks at all, actually.
He's one of those characters.
The Europeans like him. It's the Europeans saw something in him, like this is a hero, or this is the questionable tough guy we need.
But the Italians always liked interesting faces, you know, because you know, like Leone and stuff like that.
Right. Supposedly Leone offered him Fistful of Dollars. Like apparently he'll offer to 100 different actors because you'll always read these interviews. I could have done Fistful of Dollars, you know, but I turned it down.
I could have been a contender.
I need to ask you boys something because I'm not very familiar with spaghetti westerns, but and I've seen the Dollars trilogy, but who was the most popular personality wise amongst the Italians out of those three, Eli Wallach, Van Cleef, and Eastwood?
Eric, you're probably better equipped, but just off the top of my head, you know, Eastwood did the most popular stuff, but Lee Van Cleef was very prolific. I mean, there's a lot of movies starring him. What do you think, Eric?
It depends on where we're talking about. Popularity in terms of just in general popularity, then it's Clint Eastwood. I mean, that's the...
Yeah, I mean, but I'm talking about, in like, are you talking about the genre? Or like,
well, no, just out of the Dollars trilogy, the three actors, who was the most popular?
Eastwood,
yeah. Without a doubt, yeah. Yeah, Eastwood. Post that, I mean, Eastwood was out of that game by 66. It was over. Lee Van Cleef stuck around Europe and did a bunch of those movies, then tried to bring it home for a little while in the early 70s with movies like Baccaro and El Condor. It didn't quite work out for him. And then he kind of returned to Italy to do some more.
Sabato Lee Van Cleef? Or was it
Sabato Lee Van Cleef, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
There was one with Yul Brynner. But it was. I think it wasn't originally going to be a Sabato movie or something. I don't know.
Right. It was originally a character called Indio Black. But it's so similar. So they for marketing purposes, they changed the name.
That's another guy there, Yul Brynner, who never had... looks, but boy, he got the women, I tell you.
Same with Telly Savalas. Yeah.
Yul Brynner was like a go-to if you needed an ethnically ambiguous guy. You need an Asian, Yul Brynner. You need a Russian, Yul Brynner. You need an Egyptian, Yul Brynner.
He was in the Rolodex of ethnicity for Hollywood, as they say. But I was watching, staying on Yul Brynner for a second, I was watching the Stooges documentary, Gimme Danger, and Iggy Pop got inspired by Yul Brynner to always play with his shirt on, play shirtless all the time from The King and I think it was.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, because
he had interesting influences. He says that the claws, when he would do the cuts on his chest, that was because of Bruce Lee and Enter the Dragon.
Yeah, no. I think Iggy should find a person who wears a shirt as influence for now in his career.
Yeah.
You know, just for the...
Does he still do that shit?
He still performs shirtless.
Oh, God, I saw like the Stooges reunion like 12 years ago, 13 years ago. Like,
he looks like leather... In a tannery that's been left in a puddle of piss. I mean,
now you look like when you pop a piece of cheese on toast and you stick it in the grill and you leave it too long and it comes out dark brown. That's like you pop.
Yeah, these guys trying to like David Lee Roth trying to look like they were in their 20s or 30s. It's ridiculous.
He lives in Miami. I didn't even know that up until recently.
What?
Yeah, he's got like a Cuban wife or something. And
something like that.
If you have a Cuban wife, you're required by law to live in Miami. So
yeah, you have to.
Yeah.
For the record, Yul Brynner played a Cajun in Invitation to a Gunfighter. I remember that recently. Mm.
Yeah.
Cajun. But Violent City, we all agree that great opener, great closer, saggy middle. What do we got?
I agree. It's the plot just isn't that interesting. It's Charles Bronson's he's a hitman named Jeff, like Jeff Costello from
and Jeff in the DeLon movie that DeLon doesn't play Jeff.
Yeah, isn't he Jeff Costello in that film? Isn't that his name?
He's Jeff Costello in Le Samurai, and that was so popular he did a movie called Jeff, but he's not playing Jeff. It's so weird.
Interesting. Yeah, so he's Jeff, and it's like a lot of Italian kind of junk from this era. It's shot in New Orleans. He's, kind of double-crossed by a woman, and he goes to take revenge on the woman and the mob, but a lot of Italian genre movies, I think, they're very Byzantinely plotted in a way that they're kind of hard to keep up with, and it's hard to give a crap about a lot of what's going on. And this is definitely one of those. Like, I really like Salima's westerns that I've seen, which I've only seen The Big Gun Down in Face to Face, but this one I just didn't really care about what was going on. I thought it looked cool. I loved the aesthetic. But it didn't have the consistency of like a Le Samurai or The Killer, where, you're sort of enraptured in what this assassin is doing. You know, it's just,
you're not much to care about is the problem.
Yeah.
You're just not, you're going off of the basis of like, oh, I like Bronson's in it. I like Bronson. I hope he, gets the girl at the end and all that. Like, that's all that it is. Whereas in other Bronson movies, like, especially at this time, like Cold Sweat, you're given a reason to want to root for Bronson. He's got a family to take care of and stuff. Here, he's just some, asshole assassin.
Well, and I'm glad you said that, Eric, because I remember when I was watching it today, I was thinking, this car chase is cool. I have no idea who any of these people are, and I don't understand why I should care about what happens to them. But the car chase looks cool. That's what I was thinking.
The car chase is awesome. Yeah. There's some unfortunate rear projection, but it's really,
oh boy.
Yeah, there really is. But it's still a good, a neat little car chase.
Well, it's designed by Remy Julian, so that's why it's so good. He did the chases in the Italian Job and the original, and a lot of the Jackie Chan movies when they'd have these great car chases, it was Remy Julian.
One thing I noticed about this film was that Jill Ireland seemed to be the only woman in Italy. It was like there was no other women around. She just happened to be everywhere.
I was surprised by the amount of time we spent seeing her body double nude. I forgot all about that.
Yeah. And was it body double or not? Or was it her?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Fuck. Oh.
Yeah.
Is that
Sorry,
Amy Schedd?
There, but...
Boy.
Sorry.
Yeah. Whoever the body double was, my goodness.
Whew. Yeah, Jill Ireland didn't have an ass like that or a chest like that.
I just sat there yelling, no wonder Bronson. It's all over that, if it looked like that. But, yeah. But
I got some pleasure out of the middle, some scenes. Like, I like the interactions between him and Telly Savalas, even though there's – I remember this from the last time I saw it, too. Like, there is a bunch of stuff. When we first meet Telly, like an hour into the movie, he keeps referring to Bronson as a young person. Like, what? I didn't look it up. I even looked it up because I was just like, I'm pretty sure Bronson's older. And he is. He's older than Telly Savalas.
You're a young guy, Jeff. Come on.
You know what that reminds me of? It reminds me of Angelina Jolie playing Alexander the Great's mom, and who's Colin Farrell in Alexander. It was just like, what?
I will say, for me, this film was boring as hell until Telly Savalas rolled up.
Telly makes
everything.
You didn't
like the opener? You didn't like the car chase?
The opener was good. It was good because there was actually no words. It was just all.
It's all cinema. It's good.
But the opener is what, 7 or 8 minutes? That's it. And then the rest for the next 50 odd minutes is just boring.
Until hang on to those 8 minutes for all they're worth, because you're not going to have any fun.
Yeah, I know.
Oh my God, that fucking car, that race. How long does that go? I counted.
Oh, it's not forever. I think it was the American version.
Can you believe it was a 15-minute? The runtime was 15 minutes on that.
I was watching that and I was thinking this would be a cool scene if it was trimmed down and just sort of streamlined, because the idea of Bronson assassinating a guy in a race car while he watches on the TV and sort of studies them, it's a cool idea, but it goes on forever.
I think that's a popular sport in Italy.
Absolutely. I mean, that's definitely for that audience, you know.
There's an interesting parallel with a movie called The Sellout. Mike Malloy pointed this out to me and I watched it. There's an opening that's just like that scene, only the director, Peter Collinson, the guy who did The Italian Job, he had the good sense to actually make that scene like a minute long at the very most.
There's actually a parallel between the one in Violent City and the bloody pod race in Phantom Menace. It's like,
but the pod race is actually exciting.
Yeah, the pod race is one of the best things in the Star Wars prequels. It's like the Ben-Hur chariot chase. It's great. Right.
Yeah, whatever.
Don't worry. Well, the parallel was that Bronson worked with Peter Collinson, and you can win them all. You can't win them all. I've never seen it. It looks, I don't know.
I'll it's okay. It. I saw it years ago on TCM.
That's the reason. Nice. That's what I'm thinking. It looks like it's going to be okay. Looks like a Rock'em Sock'em, go here, go over there, adventure romp.
It totally is. Had it been cut to 88 minutes, it would have been fine. It would have been really good.
And we at least agree that Jill Ireland is extremely hot.
Yeah, she looks gorgeous.
This. I think this is the best she's ever looked.
I think you're right. I agree.
Totally. I agree.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
It's almost a litmus test that if you don't like Jill Ireland in this film, then you like poles instead of holes. So...
Dude, don't get us kicked off iTunes.
Polish people, come on.
Come on. there might be an explanation for the youth thing where Telly Savalas, hey, you're a young man, Jeff, even though you're older than me. Tony Musante was actually attached for a little while, which makes sense. Yeah. What doesn't make sense is that Salima wanted John Voight.
Yeah.
And that's just Italian cluelessness right there. John Voight was riding high on, you know, Midnight Cowboy.
Yeah, why would you want John Voight? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I mean, but, like, he wouldn't have been able to get him. Not in 1970.
No.
No.
You know? I mean, that's just ridiculous. But Tony Musante makes more sense. This was clearly meant for a young man. Which I guess you could argue a lot of Bronson roles are, but you think of like Hard Times, and even though he's old as hell in that, at least there's dialogue that makes sense of all that. I think Coburn calls him like you look kind of old for this kind of business or whatever it is. There's a lot of...
Well, like Bronson's character is kind of world weary. Like he's been fighting and, you know, Hard Times is one of my all time favorite Bronson films. That's maybe my favorite Walter Hill film. I mean, it's a great movie.
It's the best Walter Hill movie.
Better than the Warriors? Yeah, nah.
Yeah.
They're up there. They're both like those early Walter Hill films are great, you know, but The Driver I like quite a bit.
It's tied with The Driver and Hard Times for me.
Yeah.
I love those both.
I like
Southern Comfort as well.
Yeah, I like Southern Comfort a lot. The one that I had super hyped for me that was a disappointment was The Long Riders. I remember people saying this was like this all-time great Western, and I watched it, and I was kind of like, it's okay, you know?
I think people that don't like Westerns generally like that. That's generally what I get. Long Riders
I find that that's the case for most, like, mainstream kind of Western stuff. You know, when you look at the stuff that's highly praised, like, you know, High Noon, Johnny Guitar, what's another one? Shane. They're usually
Tombstone.
Yeah, I like Tombstone. But they tend to be movies that go against the genre, and that, you know,
I hate to say, but Unforgiven is another one of those.
Oh, Unforgiven is absolutely Unforgiven. Absolutely Unforgiven is one of those. But they tend to be movies that people who like Westerns don't like or don't really care for. You know, like you won't hear like Decision at Sundown or. You know, one of the, you know, Seven Men from Now or something like that. You won't hear like these, you know, you might hear a John Ford movie for lip service, but you won't hear like a Rio Bravo or Ride the High Country or one of those like absolute great Westerns that, you know, just tend to fly under the radar because, you know, the modern critical consensus is it has to be cynical to be good.
Audie Murphy. No Audie Murphy on their list at all, ever.
Right, yeah, Audie Murphy, you know.
Most
totally
dangerous man that ever lived.
Yeah.
Most dangerous American that ever lived can't respect his Westerns.
Yeah, exactly. That's a perfect example.
If it gets mentioned on a list, it's probably No Name on the Bullet. That's about it.
Right. That's it. Or the one he did with Don Siegel. Just because Don Siegel directed it.
And that's just that was just an exercise in futility, that movie. What is it, a Duel at Silver Creek, I think?
Yeah, it was. I was surprised how dull it was when I saw it.
It's the most average thing ever. The gunfight at the end's kind of fun, I guess. And speaking of the gunfight at the end, Long Riders, the Long Riders plays like a Cliff Notes of James Younger gang or something. It doesn't even feel like a movie. It's not a narrative. It's a series of stuff that happens.
Frankly, it's
Ice-T's favorite Western.
Oh my gosh!
Ice-T. Oh, Ice-T. Okay.
The Sam Fuller movie I shot, Jesse James, is better than The Long Riders, which is like a super low budget Western.
He's a big Western fan, but he never made a good one. All of them is hell.
I like Wild Bill. I really enjoyed that one.
I like stuff in Wild Bill. I like some of the weird stuff in it, but as a movie, as a narrative, like it's a series of stuff, it seems like to me. It doesn't even feel like there's a story of any kind. It's weird.
I mean, I'd rather watch like the long drawn out 3-hour assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford by Andrew Dominik. Yeah. You know, cuz that's a better movie than The Long Long
Riders. I still remember seeing them in the theater and thinking, like, I just watched the best movie this year.
It's a great film.
And nobody watched it.
Never seen it.
Talking about it.
Oh, it's great.
I've never seen it. I don't think I could sit through the 3 hours.
It's great. It's so good. And also his film, Killing Them Softly, I think is more relevant now.
Yeah,
then it
I have
was
to evaluate that.
I have it on Blu-ray. I've been wanting to rewatch it because, man, I watched the last scene from it the other day, and I was like, oh man, this speaks to me so much right now.
That speech, yeah, that speech.
America is not a country. America is a shopping mall. What does he say?
He says it's a business, and in America you're alone.
Yeah, it's so good. Oh, the end of that movie is just like Brad Pitt like dunking the backboard and shattering it with this speech that is it's like based in Red Pilled. It's so good.
I saw it in 08 and I didn't like it at all, but that ending stuck with me.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to reevaluate it at some point.
It deserves a reevaluation. I remember seeing it in the theater, and I remember thinking, I thought it was kind of self-important when I saw it. But the ending stuck with me. And also the scene where Ray Liotta gets his butt kicked in that movie. I remember I felt sick because it was so disgusting. That beating felt so gross and real. There was something about it that stuck with me. But the film, though, it kind of was a movie that was directly... It's a crime film, but it's about the economic crash in 08 or 07. And it really, you know... It has some stuff in there that I think speaks more now today than it did back then. Killing Them Softly, worth a rewatch, I think. But Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford. It's probably my favorite Jesse James movie. Great soundtrack by Nick Cave in it as well.
Not the best film by Andrew Dominik, though. That's Chopper.
Oh, yeah, he did Chopper. I forgot about that. Yeah, Chopper's great.
I forgot he did Chopper.
I want to get through my autistic notes just to get them out of the way.
Yes, let's do it.
Let me see. I got a few parallels with other Bronson movies. One is the most obvious existentialist hitman movie, right? The Mechanic, which is a way better film.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Then we got Bronson. We just talked about it earlier. Bronson tries to rape Ireland at the docks. There's a similar, and she's not with it, right? She's just like, no, not here, not here.
Yeah.
There's a similar scene in Breakout with Ireland and Duvall in the prison, if you remember.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. Totally.
Duvall plays her husband, who's in prison, and she goes to visit him, and he wants to bang her, but she's not into the conjugal visit. She's like, not here, not here. It's the same scene. Same scene.
And wow. Then some dudes come in, and she's like, this town is so violent. And he's like, hey, baby, it's a violent scene. Nothing happened.
So that's pretty much it. I do want to talk about New Orleans. We have a New Orleans native at least one point in his life, John Grace.
Yeah, that's true.
I want to talk about these locations. They're cool. The foreigners tended to shoot American cities a lot more interestingly than Americans.
Oh, I agree 100%. I mean,
they appreciate it.
Fulci with The Beyond is another great New Orleans Italian film.
Yeah, it is. It's beautiful. Salima in the interview on the Blue Underground disc talks about, you know, he says Louisiana is this beautiful fairy tale land to film in, and Americans had not filmed in it. And he's right, you know, except for like the Elvis movie and maybe a few other titles. I don't think there had been a scope photography color film made in New Orleans. So I think it might be the first.
You know, I was thinking about this. I watched Bud Bedeker's The Killer Is Loose and another sort of low budget the T-Men. And I think they were shot in LA, but they had that location work in old movies that you don't see a lot.
Right.
That sort of sets it apart. And I also watched Don Siegel's Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And I was sitting there thinking about how interesting old movies are that shoot in Middle America. One that example that leaps to mind is Carnival of Souls, which was made by just some, you know, corporate filmmakers from Oklahoma or something. And they shot out in Utah and they captured this sort of weirdness in Middle America that you don't often get from Hollywood movies because they're either on a studio or they're shooting in LA you see the same stuff everywhere. And so, you know, when you see it's really interesting to me when I see old films that shoot on location in Middle America, it always sets them apart. And I think Italian filmmakers were willing to take advantage financially of that, but also they could get instant production design.
Louisiana was a very accommodating to Italian filmmakers because a lot of Italian movies were shot there.
Well, they all love the big highway over the
they always shoot something on that highway.
The
French Quarter locations, those buildings look great. They look the same today.
Yeah, like, I think absolutely.
All still there. That they let them film in that cemetery with the graves that are like mausoleums or whatever.
Yeah, tombs. Yeah, where they're above.
Yeah, they always film there. The Hard Target, the John Woo movie, filmed there. Same locations. And it has that look. It's a city that looks fantastic on film. And I'm actually surprised more movies aren't filmed there nowadays, but no one cares anymore.
New Orleans is, you know, most American towns just look like suburbia. But New Orleans is one of the few American cities that has a character that is its own. It's unique. Nowhere else
in
the world looks
like
that.
Well, it has that failed Napoleonic conquest look, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, so. It's the French colonies. They all those colonial.
Haiti even has that quality to it.
It looks like a perfect city for voodoo, crime, illicit sex, everything. It's like it just looks like that on film. It's where's, that type of
is this? Where is this?
New Orleans.
New Orleans.
Let me book a ticket. Illicit sex.
not for a while. Not until our current germ warfare crisis is over.
I've heard, it's one of the cities other than New York that's probably has more cases right now.
It's not surprising. I honestly don't care if I visit it again, but
no, I went there during I went there during Halloween, and that was enough for me.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, that's the worst possible time to go, probably.
Yeah, it's just it's literal Halloween town. Like it's just a weird.
Yeah, I've been to New Orleans several times in my life. I always like visiting, but yeah, keep at arm's length the rest of the year. But the city hasn't, or at least touristy, what are those horse-drawn carriage tours that they have in the French Quarter?
Oh, yeah.
I did one in 2013, and we passed by the, I'm not sure what the name is, but the Corn Cob Hotel, the one with the gate that has the corn cobs on it.
Sure.
It's right. In the movie. We passed by it, and sure enough, the tour guide actually mentioned Violent City as one of the films that they shot there.
And then it turned out the tour guide was Charles Bronson.
Ah! Sure.
Hey, I made this movie here. It's called Violent City. It was pretty good. Sergio Salima. You might have seen The Grand Duel.
I don't think Telly was ever in Louisiana for this film. I'm not sure.
Yeah, those interior sets are all shot in Italy, more than likely.
Yeah, that was all in Rome, pretty obviously.
Yeah. What do we got? So the locations are great. Not just the French Quarter stuff, but those pretty dicey areas that he goes to meet up with that mechanic that gives him the information as to where the race car driver is going to be at.
Yeah, and I know where that's at. That's like under a bridge, heading out of the city or into another area like Algiers. I recognize those locations. That's what's so creepy about it. You know, it's like, geez, it's like going back to my childhood home here.
Nothing's changed.
Yeah, not at all. It all looks the same, and you could go there now, and it would look the same.
The bayou stuff is good, even though it comes in the middle of the movie where everything sucks. But
hasn't looked good since Steven Seagal, Lawman.
Oh yeah. Hey, where mama at? Where mama at? It's my favorite. It's my favorite Steven Seagal line. By the way, something that's hilarious in the Wikipedia page for this movie. Uh-huh. It says the film was a commercial hit, and it has a citation, and one of Sergio Salima's more political films, and where there should be a citation, it says dubious, discuss.
Yeah, that's, I don't, he gets this, I think he gets that reputation from the Westerns, particularly Face to Face. Obviously, there's a lot of politics in.
Well, I watched Face to Face the other day, and the thesis of that movie seemed to be that liberal college professors will turn into fascist dictators if you give them any power, so you shouldn't let them.
Just because you had the right politics doesn't mean that's not political.
Like he's like this liberal college professor, but then he gets some power and he's like raping women and like murdering people and has in charge of death squads. It's just hilarious. I thought it was a funny film.
That's definitely the most interesting of those three that he did. I'm not a Salima fan. I always thought him to be kind of a Leone clone. Out of the three Sergios, I guess the one that you really want to follow is Corbucci because he was all over the place. You know, he never really made the same movie twice.
No, I watched The Hellbenders the other day and I didn't really care for it. But I think part of that is because Joseph Cotten probably isn't right for those type of movies.
He never goes anywhere.
Yeah, it's just kind of a one note film. But Corbucci's,
yeah, it's a series of stuff. It's episodic and it's fine. It was entertaining, but that's okay. If you didn't like it, he has about 55 other million movies.
That's the thing is Corbucci's made so many. His westerns are all over, like Compañeros. I love Jack Palance in that film. He's like smoking weed and he's got this like bird that he talks to that he has attack people and stuff. It's just hilarious. I mean, yeah. Corbucci's movies, they can be super serious or super insane and weird. I love his work.
Plus he did plenty of Hill and Spencer movies.
Oh yeah. I mean, super Snooper, Super Fuzz is a favorite.
Yeah, he did Odds and what is that? The gambling one, Odds and Evens, and I'm trying to think. I think he did Crime Busters.
Has anybody played the Terrence Hill Bud Spencer video game?
No, I need to buy it for my kid so he'll get away from Minecraft and Roadblocks.
Oh, it's so much fun.
I've seen an hour's worth of people playing it just because out of curiosity. I haven't been able to play it myself.
I mean, it's basically a beat 'em up like Final Fight, right, or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but it's great because you'll be like fighting in a Western, you know, like beating up people, and then it'll turn out you're in a movie on a set. Then you have to fight like crew members.
It's
and stuff.
Faithful. It's faithful. I wonder, because they have the music from the movies. I wonder, like, and that was clearly like a Steam, somebody, like an independent thing. I'm sure they did not pay for the rights to use that music, and they're selling the game, right?
Yeah, I bought it on the Switch. I play it on the Switch, you know?
Yeah, maybe they did buy the rights. I find that hard to believe, but maybe they did.
There's even like race car episodes where you like race around in a car, and you have like, there's a hot dog eating contest minigame.
That's Watch Out, We're Mad.
Yeah, it's so good.
That's from that movie.
Hot dog eating contest? What?
It's Watch Out, We're Infected, right?
Yeah.
there's an old school MMC reference. But yeah, the Bud Spencer, it's called Bud Spencer and Hill Slaps and Beans, I think. But if you like spaghetti movie, if you like Italian films, you have to play it. It's so good. It's made by super. It's made by real fans of this stuff, and it comes through. It's great.
Where's the politics in Violent City? I don't see it.
I don't see it at all. There was none. But it just on Wikipedia, one of his more political films. It just says dubious discuss.
Yeah. Certainly.
I was like, yeah, I think I can just delete that.
Yeah, I don't see it. I think Revolver, his other Eurocrime movie, there might be some politics, and it's been a long time since I've seen that. I remember that liking that a lot, actually.
Yeah.
Can't recall much of it. Ollie Reed and Fabulous Testies. I guess we should talk about, well, there's not much to talk about. According to IMDb, I think it was IMDb, I looked it up. Sharon Tate was considered for the Jill Ireland role before. Actually, she was. It says she was cast, and I'm sure Bronson put the kibosh on that pretty quick.
Oh, Charles Manson put the kibosh on that one.
Oh my God, you're right. 1970, didn't even consider that. You're right. What? Didn't even consider it. Well, released in 70. Who knows when they shot it?
Probably like 66 or something. Setting the show.
Not that long, but yeah. No, I mean it could be anywhere from 6 months to a year sometimes.
Yeah. It's an odd looking movie, this one. It's so weird. It doesn't help the Daily Motion print was just absolutely shit. It wasn't even proper scope. It was zoomed in. It was
zoomed in. Yeah, it was a real chore to get through it. Not just because the movie was not very good, but.
With this film, why do you think it has such a reputation? Because I know that Nick Winding Refn says it's one of his favorite. Like,
oh God.
Well, I know, but this movie did come highly recommended to me. Yeah. I don't know who it was. Maybe I don't think it was John, because he's kind of, you know, poo-pooed it. But
I did highly think of it, but because I'm recalling my first time watching it, which was the much shorter American cut, which I think is superior, and I would buy that on Blu-ray if it were released. But also the Ennio Morricone score that I have on a Japanese import CD I found at Tower Records, I played repeatedly. And the music's great. Like, if you can hear the music in a CD version, it's fantastic.
Excellent point. I did have a note, the few notes I wrote in this, which was like, Jill Island is hot. Really like the music score. Jill Island is hot. Right. Pointless rape of Jill Island. Jill Island is hot. That's my
note. Well, it is an Italian film.
She gets raped a few times pointlessly.
Yeah, it's an Italian movie. Come on.
Yeah,
that has to happen.
Strangely, she's not digging it like in most Italian movies.
Yeah, exactly.
Eric, what do you think Salima's direction was to Charles Bronson when he when they were talking about raping Jill Ireland? What do you think? How do you think he sold it to him?
So, Chuck, listen. How about you in this scene, I want you to rape your wife. And I don't think I like that very much. He's like, come on, now we do this all the time in Italy. And they say, no. We go, yes, we do anyway. I don't care. You know, I don't know. That's what to say.
It's Italian foreplay, you know.
Yeah.
It's the usual Italian excuse. I'd always see the interviews with directors where they talk about rape scenes, and they would be like, hey, it means he loves her. He raped her because he loves her so much.
I would just say, come on.
It's alarming.
What is the difference? Kind of link this black guy. It's all the same. Who cares?
It is alarming how many rape scenes there are in Italian movies where the woman is okay with it.
Yeah.
Hey, Eric, we're passionate people. Huh?
This is how we express a love.
It's very emotional, the rape scenes.
I remember that was something that Argento always got in trouble for, was like that, like, all of his elaborate murder scenes were women, and like if a dude got killed, it was just like, oh, he's dead. but women, it was like, well, she gets stabbed in the stomach 5 times, and then we slash her throat, and then put a rope around her neck and smash her through this stained glass window, and the stained glass goes and it rips through the body of another woman. And then a hairy ape comes in and slashes her up with a razor. You know, it's just like they were like, why do you seem to hate women? And Dario Argento is like, no, well, you know, it's artistic, you know, it's the colors and whatever, you know.
No, and Dario Argento's World of Horror, he's actually interviewed about that. He says something like, hey, well, when I shoot the knifing scene, it's like I'm making love to them.
Yeah, I remember that. Yes,
it's like I love them so much, I stab them.
Yes, it's like I'm making love.
What's wrong with your country?
Only I use a knife instead. You know.
Make a note on the show summary: gratuitous bashing of Italians at a certain timestamp.
And parentheticals.
A bippity boopity. A pizza spaghetti. Every time Eric comes on, though, we end up picking on Italians, you know.
I was going to say, it's a prerequisite anyway. Once Eric's on, it's like, oh, well, low hits in Italy, this one.
Well, it's true. That's what Eric tells us.
Yes.
I don't know about them today, but the old people that I deal with, that's them to a T.
Well, I've been to Italy recently, and, you know, everything Eric told me, it matched up, you know.
Yeah. I'm like an anthropologist.
What's a four-letter word? It starts with R and ends in E. It's Rome, you dirty bastard.
That's a show title right there.
Oh, Italy. No wonder there's so many cunts dying from coronavirus.
You know what? The quote-unquote rape scene in Violent City, once again, even though she doesn't want to do it, it's only because of the location.
Yeah, no, she's like, not here.
Yeah.
Not here.
It's only the location that's a bother.
Yeah, it's just, this is an uncomfortable place for you to rape me.
Yeah, it looked like a Joe D'Amato Emmanuel movie at one point.
Oh, man.
Oh, God. I just downloaded the. Oh, sorry. I just purchased those.
I just committed an economic transaction where I acquired those films.
Acquired the film.
I acquired the film through proxy.live. Oh, Sybil Crystal's fucking dead anyway, so who cares? She's not money, non-money. But
Rome is a weird place though, because it's almost like a carnival. Like there is something Fellini's films really capture about it. I don't know what it is. It's a strange place. It's one of the weirdest places on the planet.
Do you get the feeling? I'm just thinking. I don't even know if rape is part of the conversation in Italy at all.
they actually don't have a word for it.
Yeah, they don't have a word for it.
Rough foreplay. That's all it is.
Yeah, we don't have a word for it, Eric. It don't exist.
You raped that woman. What are you talking about? I make a little love. And I'm like, no. You forced yourself upon that woman. No. You no understand.
Well, seriously, sometimes when I read like the English translations of like Euro trash novels, like the Malco books, or Eddie Constantine had some ghostwritten novels. The American actor moved to France, and in there it'll be like he made love to her, then he raped her, then he made love to her again. I swear it was like the.
Hey, what's the difference?
Yeah, I swear it's like then he raped her, then he made love to her.
Charles Bronson's like, listen, pal, I don't think she likes this.
No,
hey,
you're
bringing a double with bigger canes.
Yeah, do any of you guys reckon this film might have had a bit of a mob backing to it?
I think most movies do.
Well, like, Italian, right?
Like, I'm sorry, but the Room. That's a money laundering front. That's all it is.
I think John and I talked about it some years ago. Like Tommy Wiseau is independently wealthy.
I think he might be, but he wouldn't. He's very cagey when you ask where his money comes from. You know, he's really weird about it. And even even the disaster artist, like there's this whole thing about where does he get his money? Whatever. It's almost like they brush it off. You know, ask.
You gotta read the book to find out where he got his money.
Oh, do they talk about it in the book? I've only read part of it.
Oh, you haven't read the book. Oh,
I've read parts of it. I haven't read the whole thing.
No, apparently Wiseau made his money through just selling street toys and then buying like defective Levi jeans and.
Well, what I heard the story he always used was importing leather jackets. That was his story, but I
think that was much later on. It was Sestero says in the book, which is a fascinating read. It really is.
Yeah, what I read was really good. You know.
Yeah.
Importing Italian leather jackets. That sounds so dicey and weird.
That's what made me think. I was like, okay, this is a criminal operation.
Yeah, there's something going on there.
Cut the inside of the jacket, and there might be a bit more patting to be removed.
Yeah, that's true.
These jackets
it's
are rather
heroin,
puffy.
Heroin, right in the pocket.
These jackets are quite puffy. What?
You boys want to rate this?
Yeah, let's rate it. Eric, you go first. Guests, what do you give it out of 10?
Oh, shit. Based on the strength of the opening and the closing, because really good stuff, I'm giving this, I'm giving this a very unenthusiastic 6.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and give my rating, because I always go last. I'm just going to go ahead. I'm going to give it a 5.
Okay.
Like you said, I like the opening and the closing. It has little moments here and there, but it is mostly, I mean, I think 5 is generous. I mean, a lot of this movie is boring. There's not a lot of tension. There's not a lot of excitement. It just sort of flares up at moments. I'm not exactly sure where the reputation this movie has comes from. Maybe it's the shorter cut, like John said. But the version I saw, the Blue Underground version, the 109-minute cut, I think it's too long. It's too it's saggy, like Eric said. And, yeah, so 5 for me. Stu, what about you?
Well, I've got this scored in 3 parts, and then with an average after it. So I'm giving the film a 2. until it meets Telly Savalas and it becomes a 4.
So we got to average these out. Yeah, we got to average it out.
Yeah, Jill Ireland, so that's 10. But the overall score is 4.
Got it.
If you can work it out. Yeah.
Got it.
John, that makes mathematical sense.
Yeah. John, what about you?
I give it a 6. However, I suspect, and it's just memory, faded memory, and this is almost 30 years ago, I think the family version, the U.S. version, I would have probably rated an 8.
Wow. Really?
I think that's where my heightened opinion of it came from, was viewing it that time.
I am so sure that you're the one who told me this movie was awesome. You know, so
I loved it.
I was sitting there going, I was bored to death by this movie, and I was thinking, like, John's got to set me straight. You know,
I was shocked when I watched it 2 weeks ago, and it's like my impression. I was like, wow, was the U.S. cut that much better? And that's why I always thought this way. And even the Japanese video version was shorter, and I think it was better than this. So it was.
I was thinking about when I was watching this, though, because all the scenes in the Blue Underground version that were clearly cut, I was like, I could do without all of this.
They were totally unnecessary. It was like the director's cut of Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, the fake director's
cut. But by the way, you know, Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Makes that movie drag.
Watch the U.S. theatrical version. You do not need to watch the extended cut. It's total bullshit. You don't need to watch it.
Yeah, no, it's a load of garbage. It's 3 hours. The leaner, meaner American version is the best version of that.
Much better. And you don't have pretend Lee Van Cleef's voice. You don't have 90-year-old Eli Wallach croaking.
You don't have Gilbert Gottfried doing an old Eli Wallach voice.
Hey!
That's what it sounds like.
You gotta be poor to eat potatoes!
That's like the animated Batman films that Adam West did, where he just sounded like Alfred. He sounded like Alfred more than he did Batman.
Enjoy those that much. I just hearing his voice older like that.
Yeah. Need auto-tune on that.
When I was younger, I welcomed the scenes that Stu were talking about, where all of a sudden it would switch to Italian. I used to welcome stuff like that because I didn't want to miss anything, you know.
Me but too. Now, that's the mentality I had.
I could do without any of that shit.
It's literally mid-sentence. It goes from English and it weaves into Italian mid-sentence. I'm like, bizarre.
It ruins the flow of the movie. Well, when you're watching it.
You know. Eric, I used to have that mentality where I was like, I would also do this thing where I was like, I want the director's original intent, you know?
Right.
I want the movie they wanted to make. But I've found with a lot of films, just a lot of times the guy who's like, look, let's cut this crap out, you know, is usually right. You know, like when I watched Face to Face, the Blu-ray had an option for a longer Italian version. I was like, nah. Watching the English, I'm watching the English language version that's 90 minutes. Thank you.
It's a call back to the studio system. That's all it is. Fuck the director.
Yeah,
cut the thing. Make it entertaining.
Well, sorry,
I thought of one thing. I thought of. Sorry, Hunter. And Eric, if you're on board, it'd be good to do one day. We do it the MMC redub of this film, where we redub everything. The whole.
Oh, 100%.
If someone plays Bronson, someone plays Telly Savalas, someone plays Jill Ireland, someone plays whoever, and just redub it the way we would.
That's actually a really, you know what?
All Italian rape and Wuhan virus stuff in there as well.
Dude.
Yeah, infected city.
Actually, this is a great idea. That's what Woody Allen did with some Japanese movie in What's Up, Tiger
What's
Lily?
What's Up, Tiger Lily? It was called The Key of Keys or something.
Yeah, and it was like, just like these Japanese spy would like be beating someone. He's like, Spartan dog!
Well, they did it with Kung Pao Into the Fist as well.
Yeah, totally. Oh, man, this would be really funny. We should do that. Violent City redub.
With all of our tasteless in-jokes bashing at that.
Hey.
Now with 30% more bashing Italians.
That's a nice, yes. That's a nice girlfriend you have over there.
Hey, what's with these photos? You got my bad side. I want them back.
You know, and no amount of cuts, so I don't think the family cut is going to help in this matter. But, like, you know what this movie is missing is an action sequence in the middle of the film. Like an action sequence as strong as the car chase in the beginning of the movie. There's no action set pieces in the middle of the movie. Well,
that's,
there's none.
Yeah, that's the problem with it. It's a lot of Bronson talking to people and going, like, hey, you know, we're going to betray you, but not really. And him going, yeah, interesting. Hey, Jill Ireland, come to this warehouse with me.
Right.
I tell you what, someone playing Telly Savalas should be Zolli. Get him on to play Telly.
I'm still waiting for the Zolli episode for the Super Mario Brothers.
Oh, we need to do that one.
Yeah.
Super Mario Brothers is my Citizen Kane. it was what cinema was working towards for me. Yeah. I just why does my Zolli sound like Marlon Brando? I don't know.
It sounds like Marlon. Yeah.
Oh no, you want to do Zolli's voice? You got to do Mickey Rourke from Barfly. That's so easy.
Oh man, this is great though. We should consider doing like MMC redubs and things. That would be great. Oh man,
I'm down.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think Final City could really use it because it goes nowhere.
Yeah,
but if you take it as a visual, you could just insert your own stuff in there, and you know. There's no original audio from the film that you're going to miss.
No, hey, it's a Violent City, baby.
But it has to keep the Morricone score, of course.
Well, yeah, I mean, it would be, yeah, that's the thing is, I could probably figure out how to Foley it all in. Do it. We could do it.
That might be the legacy of the movie, and that's why, what is it, Nicholas Winding Refn and all those guys?
Tarantino used it in Django Unchained.
Say that again? Oh, they used it in Django Unchained.
Yeah.
I saw it in the theater once. I don't remember.
I mean, you know, there's no reason to see it again, but, you know.
Oh, no, there's absolutely none.
Once is not.
Yeah, once was fine. The music, the front-loaded, you know, great action sequence at the beginning probably helps, but yeah, the middle stuff's bad. I've noticed this thing. There's a tendency to overrate stuff when, say, a Quentin Tarantino owns a copy of it and he plays it regularly at the New Bev. And for instance, like we were talking about Yul Brynner recently, and there's a Eurocrime movie he made called Death Rage. Death Rage is as average as it gets. And it has this reputation among cultists that it's like a really awesome action picture. It's not. It's not. And it's only because Tarantino's like done lip service to it just because he owns a copy.
Tarantino has this kind of kingmaker status among filmmakers where he loves to do that. A movie that he has built up over the years, and I've heard a lot of people do this with this movie is Billy Wilder's Five Graves to Cairo. I have heard so many people say that that's one of their favorite movies, and Tarantino is one of the people who built this movie up. I watched it. It's fine. It's okay. Is it up there with Billy Wilder has done way better movies than Five Graves to Cairo, but it's fine. But to say it's one of your top 10 of all time, get out of here. No way. You know, it's a 3-star. It's a 6 out of 10 for me. It's fine.
What's it called? Five what?
Five Graves to Cairo.
Okay.
Yeah, it's got Eric von Stroheim as Erwin Rommel, and it's one of these like Casablanca ripoffs where it's World War II and we're all stuck in this hotel. You know, that's a whole genre. It's one of those. It's a good movie. It's fine, but it's not, like, as far as Billy Wilder films go, like, it's not Double Indemnity. It's not Sunset Boulevard. It's not even Sabrina. You know? it's okay, you know?
I haven't seen all those. I haven't seen any of them.
What? You gotta watch. Sunset Boulevard is great. Oh, so
no, good. No.
You gotta watch. Ace in the Hole! Ace in the Hole! Have you seen Ace in the Hole?
Yeah, you gotta watch Ace in the Hole.
Ace in the Hole is one of the best movies of all time.
Unless it's got Ace Frehley in it, I'm not watching it.
No, dude, so. Come on. Ace in the Hole is a 10 out of 10. It's so good. I showed it to my students, and they all agreed. They were like, this is one of the best movies ever made.
Oh, well, that fucking Singing in the Rain shit I had to sit through. Oh, God, awful.
Singing in the Rain is one of the greatest movies of all time.
I love Singing in the Rain. It might be my favorite
movie. Good. Oh, they today on TCM, they had Stanley Donen Day. Fantastic, you know.
That's also known as Stuart Doesn't Watch TCM Day.
Also known as Stuart Doesn't Have TCM, so he doesn't care.
I don't have it either, so no cable.
I only have it because my wife's like mom has it, so we use her thing to stream.
Turner crap.
It's the only reason I have cable.
Dude, Turner Classic Movies is the best. I love it. It's so good. Like, and if you have the app with your cable package, you know, you can like log in. They have stuff to stream, and you know, you can watch it on your Apple TV. It's great. I love it. It's so good.
Hey, you know, if Warner Brothers would launch the fucking HBO Max service they promised, which is supposed to include TCM, you know, would have a great time during this quarantine watching it that. Works. But they backed off on doing that. They were supposed to launch this spring and didn't happen.
Yeah, real missed opportunity there.
Maybe they're waiting for the Snyder Cut to be finished.
Walter is waiting with bated breath.
Did you notice the end credits for this film had nothing? It was like nobody got listed except for some costume designers and actors.
They didn't do end credits back then.
Yeah, really?
American Graffiti, I think, was the first film to go through the trouble of actually having detailed end credits, and that became a standard in the industry.
Oh, really?
Yeah, before that was just like the end.
It turns out Lucas's lasting legacy is not Star Wars after Disney's gotten over with it, but it's the credit sequence.
Yeah.
True.
So I don't think THX had much of an end sequence or end credits. I think it was just the end. That was it.
No, I think it was American Graffiti. He did a detailed closing credits, and that became the standard. You know, but I'll watch Shaw Brothers movies from the 80s. It'll just say, the end, another Shaw Brothers production, like, and that's it.
Shaw Brothers movies end like this. The bad guy gets punched in the face. The end! Another Shaw Brothers production.
Well, Golden Harvest, somebody gets kicked in the ass, and they fly to the camera.
That's my favorite part of a Shaw Brothers film, when it sees the stupid studio. Can't stand it.
I love it. It's good stuff.
Yeah. Nope. All right. Well, we better wrap this up.
Yeah, for sure. Eric, do you have anything you want to promote right now?
Oh, Spaghetti Western Deep Cuts, that YouTube channel of mine, and I'm just going deep diving into movies that nobody cares about, so nobody watches. So be one of those people, or don't actually. I did Death Walks in Laredo, which actually might be worth talking about. On
I'm going to go deep dive into my woman.
Yeah, into somebody else's woman.
Yeah, that's right. Any woman, who care? I tell you what, when we do the if we end up doing the Violent City redub, we should name the director Quarantine Tarantino.
Quentin Quarantino.
Quarantino, yeah, a Quarantine Tarantino redub.
He's in Israel now, I think.
Yeah.
Ah.
Well, what's he doing there?
He's writing stupid reviews for movies that nobody cares about.
Yeah, he's writing a lot of like movie articles, and you know, he's married to some Israeli chick.
He's doing a podcast.
Oh, jeez.
Right. The New Beverly podcast.
Hey, it's the New Beverly podcast. You know, I'm here with Roger Avery. How you doing, Roger? Shut up, okay? I got the Oscar, not you. You loser. Okay, so anyway, hi. Oh, you're in prison, right? Get out of here.
He's like the last person to do who should do a podcast.
He's the worst. He shouldn't even act. He's awful.
I know. You know who should do a podcast? Vincent Gallo.
Vincent Gallo could be the best.
He's a great talker.
We would have to cancel our podcast because his would be so good that we would feel shame. Okay. The
Prince Vince cast.
Vince. No, like Ice-T would have to turn off his Twitter. Okay, that's what would happen. Okay, Ice-T would have to turn off his Twitter because he would feel shame that Prince Vince is out there.
If they ever made a fucking live action version of the Fat Albert movie, they need to stick Ice-T as one of the kids in there. He looks like that mush mouth these days from Fat Albert show. That is one ugly motherfucker. I just can't stand him either.
I like Body Count. It's a cool band.
Yeah, okay. Whatever you say.
Yeah. All right, guys.
When you kick out these jams, yo. Hurry up and die, Ernie C, because we're shit.
But half of that band is literally a body count, you know.
Well, they're all like half were diabetic.
Well, one of them got killed in like a drive-by shooting or something.
Oh,
know?
What a shocker.
Cop killer!
The name of your band.
But anyway, I think he was also, the one who got killed in the drive-by also played with Iggy. I think he played with Iggy Pop.
It was on the American Caesar tour, I think.
Anyway, but anything else before we go, fellas? Eric, anybody?
Let's wrap it up, Hunter.
Yeah, well, anyways, guys, thank you all for listening. I'm going to go ahead and wrap this up and say adios.
And I'll say peace out.
And I'll say metal pig.
I'll say who loves you, baby.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.